work.
In the mortgage industry, the mortgage specialists proudly offer some of the lowest rates available. When you work with an expert from the mortgage specialists, you can rest assured knowing that you are working with someone who truly cares about you. Are you unsure about which loan option is right for you? By giving the mortgage specialists a call today, they would be more than happy to schedule either an in-home or in-branch consultation. They will get to know you and your finances to learn more about how they can help you with your loan option that is best for you and your situation. To learn more or schedule your first consultation, contact the mortgage specialist today at 877-411-0123. That's 877-411-0123. TheMortgageSpecialists.com.
IPMNation.com.
Live, May 12th, 2016, a little bit after 11 p.m. in the Eastern Time Zone. Of course, we're live on IPM Nation 2. You can hear the show 5 nights a week at 11 p.m. Eastern on IPM Nation 2. And, of course, Tuesdays and Thursday nights, we also have the honor and privilege of being on OTR FM, the premium channel on the Ohm Times Radio Network. So, of course, Unleashed is sponsored by the Mortgage Specialists, as you heard at the top of the show. And we broadcast from the Uptown Auto Repair Studio in Manchester, New Hampshire, going out worldwide. And, of course, we are powered by Ambit Energy. If you want to learn how to save on your energy bills, go to ipmnation.ambitrabbit.com. You'll be very happy that you did it, I promise. And you can learn more there and sign up, etc. Very easy to do. And let's see, we do have a phone line open for you tonight. If anyone would like to call in, 617-917-4IPM. That's IPM as in IPM Nation. 617-917-4476. You can call or text. And we have the chat room, which I'm getting better about keeping an eye on the chat room at ipmnation.com/live2. And you can tweet me anytime at Matt Connerton. And you can post anything on the IPM Nation, or I'm sorry, well, you can post on the IPM Nation Facebook page, but also on the Matt Connerton Unleashed Facebook page. Looks like some breaking news, by the way, on Politico, which we'll have to definitely get to. This looks, says a House GOP wins Obamacare lawsuit. That's interesting. I'm not sure exactly. Like I said, this just showed up on the site. This just happened today, apparently. So that'll be interesting. We'll have to dive into that tonight. This week's television edition of the show, by the way, is up. And again, it was one of those instances where we kind of initiated the conversation with our guests on Ward 13 with John Hopwood, which you can see Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on IPM Nation, and then we just kind of continued it over into my show, Matt Connerton Unleashed, the television edition, which is live on Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. So we've got both of them up on the IPM Nation YouTube channel, which easiest way to get to that, by the way, just click the YouTube link at the top left on ipmnation.com. And we talked with Bonnie Wright, who's been on both my show and John Hopwood's show a few times. And she was on Rock, Paper, Hand Grenades once too, actually. That's how Bonnie and I first met a couple of years ago. She's been fighting the good fight, trying to get labeling for GMOs. And she had a couple folks with her too this time to really kind of enhance the discussion. So you can check all that out. It was really pretty interesting. And Tom Massengale joined us by Skype, as he often does for both shows. If you didn't see the shows yet, it got pretty interesting with Tom. You know, John kind of gets frustrated with Tom and sometimes, and actually hung up on him this week, actually hung up on Tom Massengale. And then we called him back for my show. But it was funny because Hopwood gets upset when Tom talks too much because he feels like he keeps trying to change the subject and shill for Bernie and whatnot. But then, so on my show, so we call Tom back on my show because whatever Hopwood throws at him, Tom just laughs it off, including hanging up on him. He just laughs. He thinks it's funny. So then we call him back, and, you know, and I'm like, Tom, on my show, you can say whatever you want. And then he clams up, and it's like, Hopwood's like, see, he does this just to screw with me. He's now on your show, you give him free rein, and he's all of a sudden he's got nothing to say. So that dynamic's kind of fun. But anyway, so I cannot announce anything yet, but something is, I'm pretty sure, about to happen in terms of the television edition of Matt Connerton Unleashed and Ward 13 with John Hopwood, too, I assume, will be a part of this upcoming change, which we'll probably see in the next couple weeks. And it's going to be something really, really cool. I don't know all the details yet, so I can't make any kind of formal announcement. But from the conversation that I had with a certain individual who's in a position to make these decisions, we're going to be getting a bit of an upgrade with the television edition of Matt Connerton Unleashed, and I assume with Ward 13 as well. So I'm really excited. It's something that I've been hoping was going to happen for a long time, and it's something that I think John had even lobbied for at one point several months ago. But it looks like it's finally going to happen. And as soon as I know it's definitely going to happen and I know all the details, I will be very excited to share those with you. And this is, from what I was told, this is a change that is going to be happening very soon. And I think it's going to really, I'll say this much. When it happens, we'll probably be able to increase our live viewership. And we'll probably have access to a lot more guests. So... And I've already said too much because that was a pretty big hint right there. So I'll keep you all posted, but I'm excited. So, well, first, before we hit this first break, we'll come back to the Obamacare thing. I also have some audio that I want to play for you of David Axelrod and his interview with Jon Stewart recently talking about Trump. That's really interesting. But, you know, I was speculating on Tuesday how this meeting was going to go with Paul Ryan and Donald Trump today. And I was kind of right, but not entirely. Apparently, the meeting went very well. I suspected it would. They were saying some conciliatory sounding things about each other. And Trump said, you know, he does not want Paul Ryan to step down as chair of the convention, the Republican convention this year. And, you know, and Paul Ryan was saying things like, well, I don't know. I don't know Donald Trump very well. I need some more information about his positions and so forth. And they were sounding increasingly more conciliatory as the meeting drew closer. My prediction was that after the meeting, they would have some sort of joint, not necessarily a joint press conference, but they'd be in front of the television cameras together and would say nice things. And basically, Paul Ryan would end up sort of, if not directly, basically endorsing Trump. And Trump would say something nice about Paul Ryan, and it would be all very lovey-dovey and onward and upward for the Republicans going into the convention with Ryan on board, fully on board the Trump train. I was basically right in that it apparently the meeting went well and everybody was happy and it was somewhat kumbaya afterward, but where I wasn't entirely right is Paul Ryan has not quite endorsed Donald Trump yet. And I thought this was going to go really after this meeting. I figured it would be full on. Trump would be, endorsed by Paul Ryan, you know, to some degree, maybe not enthusiastically, but you know, enough. And that didn't quite happen. Let's see. The article on Politico quickly says, Ryan's encouraged after Trump meeting, but no endorsement yet. Quote, this was our first meeting, but it was a very positive step toward unification, the two said afterward. It says here, Paul Ryan and Donald Trump finally met, and they decided to have more meetings. The highly anticipated summit Thursday between the top Republican elected official in the country and the GOP's presumptive presidential nominee produced a media frenzy, but yielded little in the way of tangible results. Ryan, as expected, didn't endorse Trump, and it's clear major policy differences remain. But for now, the two are trying to display unity as they prepare for a battle with Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. With Republican control of the Senate on the line, as well as fears that Democrats could make big inroads into the House Republican majority, much less the battle for the White House itself, the stakes for both men are enormous. They need to find some means to cooperate or at least appear amicable. So there's more to the article. You can, if you want to check it out, it is up on Politico. You can read some of what they had to say. Maybe we'll come back to it later in the show. I'm actually curious to look at this closer and examine some of the reaction to it. But I do want to get on to some other things as well. But the full article is up on Politico. So I think they're probably they'll get to that full on kumbaya endorsement moment. I think it's inevitable. Paul Ryan's a shrewd guy. You know, he's definitely got some ambition. And in his own way, Trump is pretty shrewd. So we'll see. Paul Ryan, I still think he's going to run for president in 2020. Maybe. We'll be right back.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Matt Connerton here. Join Jen Coffey and I twice a week for Matt Connerton Unleashed, a political talk show that's a little different than what you're used to. No liberal or conservative agenda here, just an honest dialogue about truth and how things really work in the world of politics. Matt Connerton Unleashed, every Tuesday and Thursday night at 11 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on OM Times Radio, every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for School Girls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
IPMNation.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Matt Connerton Unleashed. We're live. It's a Thursday night. We're on IPM Nation 2 and OTR FM. I want to play some audio for you. This is John Stewart and David Axelrod did this event where apparently Axelrod has a show now called The Axe Report, and it's this podcast that they do, but they do it in front of a studio audience. And John Stewart was on discussing Trump and the media and Trump's voters, and he says some really interesting things. And I want to play this clip for you. It's about 8 minutes long. So it's not quick, but it's really, really interesting. Now, I will warn you before I play this, there is a little bit of salty language in this. And I know, of course, we don't censor anything on IPM Nation. And Ohm Times really doesn't either. The one thing I was told when we came on board with Ohm Times is, you know, they don't want any shock jockey kind of stuff. Not, you know, so don't go on there and drop a bunch of F-bombs and whatnot. But there is a little bit of salty language in this, but it's not in any way what you would call gratuitous. So I think it's fine. I mean, on terrestrial radio, absolutely not. I could not play this clip. But of course, we're online with this show, strictly online. And I think this will be fine. If not, I'm sure I'll hear from somebody, but I think it'll be okay. So this is John Stewart and David Axelrod talking. And John Stewart says some very interesting things here. And I've always been a big fan of John Stewart, but here it is.
So I listen to talk radio, and it is 24/7 of your country is being taken away from you. As far as I can tell, the conservative side or on the right side, they feel an ownership over America. They are the stewards of America. They are its forebearers. Exactly. Republicans, conservatives love America. They just hate like 50% of the people living in it. So, but no, it's in some ways it's a natural reaction to fear. Now, if you have that fear stoked on a daily basis at an incredibly high pitch, and this is not, we really need to do something about this country. We're facing some difficult problems. This is, you are run by a tyrant. He is going to take away your rights. We are falling. There are rapists and murderers at the border coming to kill you. If that's what you've been fed and that's what you're buying into, Donald Trump makes more sense than anybody else out there, because he's going, great, let's build the Visigoths are out the gate. Let's build a fucking wall and not let it. It makes total sense. What wouldn't make sense are the general Republican leadership going, there are Visigoths at the wall, they are here to kill you, let's try and not pass a new budget resolution. You know, that's, I don't know that a man baby can be president. He's character is destiny, and he is the most thin-skinned individual. And look, when he becomes president, he's gonna be totally mature. And
well, he says being presidential is easy, and he'll do it at the appropriate time.
But what does that say about your constituency if what you're saying to them is, look, the only way that I can win this part of the race is by being an unrepentant, narcissistic asshole, because that's what my voters like. But once I have to appeal to everybody, I'll be cool.
Authenticity is what they say.
This gets to the point, though, of the press versus the campaign. And what we see in the press is they're covering the campaign, but they're not covering veracity or, you know, so the exit polls say this is what people think. Then someone in the press has to come out and go, wow, people must be assholes, because that's not okay to think. You know, it's not okay to have nostalgia for the Mad Men society and think that that ignorance is virtue. And they have twisted this around so that his ignorant pronouncements are somehow a sign of great character. See, here's what's so amazing about this. So the whole idea of political correctness is everybody's so sensitive. Just get over it. You know, why should African Americans be so sensitive about police shootings? Why do they have to be so sensitive about years of systemic racism creating economic disparity? Come on, I'm not a slave owner. Donald Trump couldn't handle us making a joke about him. Vanity Fair, Graydon Carter did a joke about Donald Trump's hands 25 years ago. He's still not fucking over it. But the idea being that Muslims, hey man, all he's saying is they're evil and shouldn't be allowed in this country. He's just telling it like it is. But God forbid you say happy holidays in December. It's fucking war. So who is it who's exactly sensitive here? We're only talking about what are the trigger points. And the trigger points to me seem to be on one side, grounded in a certain reality of life that only those with no experience or empathy towards what those individuals are going through are having, and the other seems to be a clinging to a societal paradigm that just doesn't exist anymore and probably never did. When was America great? When? What is this time that he speaks of? 81 to 82? Like, what are we talking about? And who took your country away from you?
Yeah.
Whose country, whose is it?
Yeah.
Don't take up the argument with the founders. Take it up with the Age of Reason. That's the, you know, all men are created equal. That's fucked the whole thing up.
Yeah.
The problems in this country are not because of Mexicans and Muslims. And if they want to in any way confront what's really going on, the problems in this country is you have one party in America whose sole purpose is to freeze the government and to not fix any of the problems that are associated with it. They have a great game going, which is government sucks and can't get the job done. And then they can sit as an impediment to that government and point to their destruction as evidence of their thesis. When you have the presidents of networks saying Trump is good for business, when you have the lead anchor of Fox News having to go to Trump's hotel to make him stop being mean to her, and now he says she's terrific because they've had a detente, that's fucked.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how you describe, you know, there are heads of networks who have said Donald Trump is great for business. Well, why would you kill the thing that's great for business?
Well, I asked
why
you at the beginning,
even,
and
why would you even say what it was?
I asked you at the beginning, and you were sort of dismissive about what the role of the media has been. But what you're suggesting is that there is, they have a pecuniary interest in the Trump story.
Correct. An entire industry has risen up as to how to manipulate and skew that medium to the advantage of the politicians and the powerful. And the industry, rather than in some ways creating a counterweight to that, have been subsumed by it. And so now it's a symbiosis. The media is no longer predator and prey, which I think is should be the relationship, but a remora that's just attached underneath, hoping for crumbs that fall off of the shark. The relentlessness of the cycle requires an equal counterweight. A counterweight does not mean that occasionally, you know, you push back to a small extent as the waters rush by you everywhere else. That's, I think, where Fox has an advantage, is that they understood that to take over the cycle, you need to be relentless. You need to be perpetuating your point of view and your propaganda in the same way that people consume it, which is constantly and self-reinforcingly and over and over and over again.
Unless you have something pushing back
with that same force, you're not going to have any balance.
Well, the interesting thing about this election, though, you say it's not much different. Trump has basically embraced that tactic. I mean, he is relentless. He is ubiquitous. He is out there all the time.
He's just doing judo against them. What works for 24-hour network? What is it incentivized for? It is incentivized for, here's what you would want it to be incentivized for, clarity. It is incentivized for what? Conflict. The voices that are amplified are the ones that are the most conflict-oriented, the most extreme. Those are the guys that get the airtime. So if they're incentivized for conflict, Trump is not playing this like everybody keeps talking about. He's amazing. He's not. This is the first season of Survivor. This is reality show 101.
Right.
I'm going to be an enormous dick at the beginning of the show to get all this attention. And then once I make it to final counsel, then I'm going to reveal. He's, what's the guy's name? Johnny Fairplay. He's Johnny Fairplay. He's the guy who said, oh, my grandmother died, and don't vote me out. And then finally, when he got to the final tribal council, that's what he's playing.
So that was John Stewart talking with David Axelrod, and I like a lot of what he said there. And but I've always found John Stewart's analysis, I mean, I've always found him very funny, for one thing, and I always enjoyed him on The Daily Show. But I've also, you know, found his serious analysis of the media itself and how the media operates and so forth to be really insightful And I think he's right. And he has a way of, you know, I think a lot of those same things, but I can't articulate them as well as he does. He's just a masterful communicator. I know that, you know, a lot of my conservative friends probably will, you know, just dismiss anything he says automatically because conservatives generally don't like Jon Stewart. Oh, he's a liberal and this and that. And he is a liberal. But, you know, you don't have to agree with everything that he thinks or believes to appreciate some of his analysis of the media itself, which, again, I think is really accurate. And I think I like what he says about Trump. There's another clip that I was listening to earlier in the day where he really kind of goes after Trump and says some really funny things about him. The full thing, I think it's 90 minutes. I haven't listened to the whole podcast yet. I think it's about 90 minutes long. It's on YouTube, but I look forward to listening to the whole thing. At one point in one clip that I did hear, David Axelrod asks him something I've been kind of wondering about is, you know, are you bummed that you decided to finally retire from the Daily Show? And then along comes Trump running for president. But Jon Stewart's reaction to it, and maybe it's sour grapes, I don't know, but his reaction to that was, well, I don't really think it's that much different. You know, how different is Donald Trump than, say, Sarah Palin, you know? What we'll do is we're up against another break. When we come back, I want to look at what this news is about the Obamacare lawsuit. I have not looked at this at all yet, so this will be interesting. We'll learn together. More Unleashed coming up. Don't go away. We're only halfway done. See you after the break.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community. Join Elliot Jolish, the business therapist, each Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern for the Elliot Jolish Hour, as he interviews business experts on your behalf. And you're invited to email your business questions to questions@ecjgroup.com for answers, live, on air, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on the Elliot Jolish Hour.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at OM Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. OM Times Advisors, connecting you with the best advisors in the business.
Interesting about that particular bumper, it sounds like there's a voice in there, but I'm not sure if there actually is or if that's just an effect. Well, that part's gone. But yeah, when it kind of slows, well, not slows down, the tempo doesn't change, but when it kind of changes, it sounds like there's a voice, and but I'm not sure if there really is. And if there is a voice, what is he saying? It sounds maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm insane. But I always think I hear a voice in that bumper. And it sounds like it's going, but I don't know. I just don't know. I'm going to have to listen to that a little more closely with the headphones. Anyway, welcome back to Matt Connerton Unleashed. We're live. Let's see. House GOP wins Obamacare lawsuit. This is from Politico. A federal judge on Thursday ruled the Obama administration has been improperly funding an Obamacare subsidy program, a huge win for the House of Representatives in a lawsuit against the White House. Congress authorized the program, but never actually provided the money for it, wrote U.S. District Court Judge Rosemary M. Collier. The program will be allowed to continue pending appeal, wrote Collier, a George W. Bush appointee, quote, Congress is the only source for such an appropriation, and no public money can be spent without one, unquote. The ruling, if it stands, could be a significant financial setback for the millions of low-income Americans who benefit from the cost-sharing subsidies, which help people pay for out-of-pocket costs like copays at a doctor's office. It would not be a fatal blow to the future of the president's signature domestic policy achievement, but it could push insurance costs higher. A big surprise. Republicans have praised the challenge as a needed check on the White House's authority. Said House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Kevin Brady, quote, this decision is a critical step in protecting Congress's power of the purse from an administration that has repeatedly ignored a fundamental principle of our republic, the separation of powers, unquote. The Obama administration is expected to immediately appeal the decision to the district, to the D.C. Circuit Court, rather, of appeals. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said, quote, this is not the first time that we've seen opponents of the Affordable Care Act go through the motions to try to win this political fight in the court system, unquote. That reminds me, whatever happened to that lawsuit John Boehner was all excited about regarding Obamacare? Not about this, but in the broader side. I don't know. It ended up not going anywhere. Let's see. But instead, what they're trying to do clearly is they're trying to sort of pick at it, specific parts of it, which I think in the long run is, I don't know. I have a lot of mixed feelings about it, to be honest with you. I did not support Obamacare, but I also have never been wild about this whole repeal and replace mantra either. let's see. The healthcare law was designed to reimburse insurers for providing the cost-sharing subsidies to low-income customers who purchased exchange coverage. A second Obamacare subsidy program helping customers pay monthly premiums wasn't a target in the House lawsuit. The House argues that the cost-sharing program was authorized but never appropriated. The House says that there is proof that the White House knew the cost-sharing subsidies weren't funded and worked around the legislation to implement them. The White House asked Congress to fund the program in its fiscal 2014 budget request, which was denied. It then unilaterally funded the program through the refundable tax credit account anyway, the House lawyers argued in court. That's interesting. When he filed the House versus Burwell lawsuit 2 years ago, former House Speaker John Boehner framed it as a check on the executive branch's ability to change legislation once it was approved by Congress. Okay, let me stop there for a second and correct myself. That was the lawsuit. It's the same lawsuit. Now it makes a little bit more sense now. So it did go somewhere. We just kind of stopped hearing about it. Because I remember at the time, there was a lot of speculation that this wasn't going anywhere and that this was just saber rattling on the part of John Boehner because they weren't going to be able to successfully bring a lawsuit on this because, you know, they didn't have standing. And standing just means that you have to be, in theory, you have to be directly affected by something in order to sue. Now, I know that there are some legal scholars who say the whole concept of standing is really kind of a myth, because it hasn't always been a thing. It's not like it's enshrined in the Constitution. So there's, and you know, I'm talking about things that are beyond my scope. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, nor am I a constitutional scholar. And I know there's probably somebody listening going, yeah, Matt, we kind of noticed that. But I remember at the time there was a lot of speculation that this isn't going anywhere because they're not going to be able to go anywhere with it. But apparently they did, and they won. At least this round. I mean, then you've got appeals and everything. But let's see. There's more to this. The Justice Department says the subsidies were funded appropriately. Its lawyers told the court that the program was funded in the same pot of money as the law's refundable tax credits to help people pay for premiums. Part of the Obama administration's defense is that the health law was not written well, an argument it also made during prior Obamacare legal battles. Yes, that has come up a few times. Because then there's this argument that comes up with a lot of things, but it's come up with Obamacare on more than once. You know, there's that difference between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. You know, the letter of the law being, what does the law literally say? And then the spirit of the law being, well, what is this law actually supposed to do? And sometimes you'll hear lawyers argue, well, regardless of what the letter of the law is, the spirit of the law is really this. And we all kind of know that the spirit of the law is really this. So, and then they'll try to argue for a decision in favor of what the law was supposed to do versus the way it's literally written, because bad, poorly written laws happen all the time, unfortunately. Let's see. The Obama administration argued that the budget request cited by the House isn't proof of malfeasance. In other words, there wasn't something intentionally nefarious done here, is their argument. Justice Department lawyers said the request did not fully account for, quote, text, structure, design, and history of the ACA, a complex statute that the Supreme Court recently described as containing more than a few examples of inartful drafting, unquote. What was the thing? There was one thing that had come up a couple of years ago, an example of that. It had something to do with all of the states were supposed to be included, but there was some sort of, it was like some states, there was an out clause, basically, a loophole where some states could opt out of the Affordable Care Act entirely, not because it was supposed to be that way, but because there was a mistake, and it came down. Maybe I'll try to look this up during the break so I can get this exactly right, but it came down to like one word in the law was wrong because somebody made a mistake, and because of that, it could have completely changed how the law works. And that was an example of, I believe, the Supreme Court. That one went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they ended up ruling that that was an example of where the spirit of the law actually won out over the letter of the law, because it was clear to the justices ruled it was clear to them that the spirit of the law was it. All the states were supposed to be included, but there was this unintended loophole given, and it was interesting because it came down to like one word that was wrong. Let's see a little bit more to this before we hit the break. The Obama administration also heavily relied on last year's Supreme Court decision in King versus Burwell, which was centered on the health law's premium subsidies, to stress that a court must look at an entire law, not specific provisions. It says that the two subsidy programs were designed to work together as one. The cost-sharing subsidies are available to people with incomes between the federal poverty level of 250% FPL or between blah, 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 math. We're going to go to the next paragraph because math is hard for me. Several million Obamacare customers receive cost-cutting subsidies, but the exact figure is unknown. As of the middle of the last Obamacare enrollment period, 57% of people who signed up for coverage through the federal exchange on healthcare.gov received them. If the cost-sharing subsidies are eliminated, government actuaries estimate that insurers would increase premiums up to 20 to 30% for silver-tiered plans to make up for the loss. As a result, the premium tax credits would increase a higher cost to the federal government, according to the Department of Health and Human Services. Okay, there is more to this, but we've gone as far into the weeds on this as I dare. But the article is up on Politico. Look, this is why the ACA was a bad idea. Healthcare reform, absolutely necessary in this country, but you know, the way to accomplish that would have been ideally for a more free market-based system where you make things less complicated, not more complicated. And that's what it really comes down to. Nothing is ever solved by making it unnecessarily more complicated and by expanding government's role in such thing. That's never the right way to go. That doesn't mean you necessarily repeal the entire thing, because I think that's problematic. I'd prefer to see specific things about it changed now that it's been law for a few years now. But this was not the way to do it, because then we get into all kinds of complicated situations. That's what happens when you, well, when you make things more complicated. We'll be right back. One more segment to go. Matt Connerton Unleashed. We're live. Stay with me.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Hi, everyone. This is Shay Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shay Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Matt Connerton Unleashed. Our final segment tonight on this Thursday evening. It's a warm one here. Again, I know we have a large concentration of listeners in the Northeast. In Manchester, New Hampshire, where I am, it got up into the 80s today. Personally, I'm a big fan of the heat. Not everyone is, but I like it when it's hot. Although today was pretty exhausting. I had to help somebody move today, so if I sound a little tired, I apologize. Although something good came out of that too, which I cannot say anything about yet. But we've got a surprise for you, IPM Nationers, soon, very very soon. So we got, and I talked about a surprise earlier too. We had all kinds of good things in the works. Let's see. This I also saw on Politico, because I'm completely fascinated by, just like I was several years ago when the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party seemed to be causing all this turmoil. Now Trump is causing all this turmoil. I just I enjoy the turmoil. You know, I ultimately I'd like to see the destruction of the two-party system. There's turmoil with the Democrats too, with Bernie Sanders not making it easy, not allowing the coronation of Hillary Clinton, even though, you know, she'll still be the nominee. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because whatever happens in the Democratic Party in terms of the turmoil never seems to be as dramatic. But it's there. You know, I've said it for years. I felt that it was kind of bubbling beneath the surface, because you've got, you know, just like now with the Republicans, you can kind of divide them into pro-Trump and anti-Trump. Again, that's a hypersimplification, but for the sake of argument, you know, on the left for the Democrats, it's like you've got, corporate Democrats versus liberal Democrats. You know, Hillary is essentially a corporatist, not a liberal by any means. And Bernie, of course, is a true liberal. He's a democratic socialist. And so it's interesting to see that split. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, just how pissed off the Bernie Sanders voters are going to be by the time we get to the convention. Because I wonder, you know, obviously with the Democrats, it's kind of rigged with the superdelegates and whatnot. And we saw, you know, I know I've mentioned this before, but, you know, here in New Hampshire, he crushed her in the New Hampshire primary. And then they come out of it with an even number of delegates. Or maybe he had one more delegate than she did. I don't remember exactly. But it's like, that's why I always say, remember, kids, every vote counts, except not really. So I love seeing these schisms, because I just want to see the two-party system go away entirely. I think it's ruining the country. The two-party system, it's destroying America. I'm kind of a non-destroy America type of guy. That's my position. Controversial, I know. See, if Jon Stewart heard me saying that, he would think I was a right-wing talk show host, which I'm not, because I was talking about, you know, America being destroyed. I actually think America is going to be fine. But if Donald Trump does destroy America, well, at least it'll be entertaining in the process. Sometimes you just this. I say this to some of the non-Trump supporting Republicans. You know, sometimes you just got to lean into it and embrace the horror. Anyway. So this is on Politico. The never again Trump sets sights on 2020. Grassroots conservatives and party leadership are finding a common cause, limiting Republican primaries to registered Republican voters. Now, this is interesting, because in some states you have these open primaries where, you know, you can, where anyone can vote. And then in other states you have the closed primaries where, so for example, for the Republicans, you have to be a registered Republican to vote in the Republican primary. But in some states where they have open primaries, independents can go in and vote for, you know, whichever, you know, I voted in the, I voted proudly in the Democratic primary. Well, I am currently a registered Democrat, even though I consider myself an independent. I voted proudly for Vermin Supreme here in New Hampshire. But let's see what this says. So conservatives still reeling over the looming nomination of Donald Trump are pushing new Republican primary rules that might have prevented the mogul's victory in the first place, shutting out independents and Democrats from helping to pick the GOP nominee. Trump romped in open primaries where non-Republicans voted by the thousands and may have influenced the outcome, especially in early states that set the tone for the entire race. Trump's most successful rival, Ted Cruz, thrived in states with closed primaries where only Republicans were permitted to participate. Now, Cruz's allies, hundreds of supportive convention delegates that he helped elect, hope to use the national convention in Cleveland to shove states toward closing their own open primaries. And if they're successful, it will not only go a long way toward warding off a Trump-like candidacy, it will tilt the primary toward conservative candidates in 2020 and beyond. The advocates are finding a sympathetic ear at the very top of the party. Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus has long supported closed primaries, but has never had a constituency to back him on it. Quote, "I believe that only Republicans should vote in Republican primaries," unquote, he said Friday at a Politico Playbook breakfast event, though he added that he respects the rights of states to set their own primary rules. For the conservatives, Trump's path through the Republican primary is proof that the system needs to change. Kendall Unruh, a Colorado GOP activist, said of Trump, quote, "We now have a progressive Trojan horse candidate that manipulated the open primary process to hijack the GOP nomination," unquote. Unruh will sit on the Convention Rules Committee, the panel that will set the terms for the 2020 presidential campaign. Cruz himself is at the forefront of the effort and has continued pleading with his delegates to battle their way to the convention and commandeer the rulemaking process that will govern both the July convention and the 2020 presidential election process. In a conference call with his delegates Monday night, Cruz and top campaign advisor Ken Cuccinelli urged them to fight for rules that enhance the power of the party's grassroots. Choking off Democratic and independent influence from primaries is one way to do that, said Unruh, who was on the call. She said, "We still have a job to do," unquote. Unruh isn't alone. Her fellow Rules Committee member from Colorado, Guy Short, ripped open primaries as antithetical to GOP interests. He said, quote, "I think we need to start punishing states that have open primaries. If you're not a Republican, then you can wait for the general. Democrats shouldn't have a role in choosing our nominee," unquote. For years, these arguments have hit resistance from GOP elders and the party insiders who control the rulemaking process at conventions past. Closed primaries, they say, are self-defeating. Shutting out non-Republicans shrinks the pool of engaged voters and limits the party's ability to attract new support. But Cruz's unrivaled organizing and lengthy candidacy helped him recruit hundreds of supportive delegates that could upend the calculus and predictability of the process this year. Many are still sore over Trump's win and wouldn't mind crossing the presumptive GOP nominee, who now views himself as the leader of the party. Quote, "I don't believe they would be concerned that it would be a slap at Donald Trump," unquote, said one Republican delegate to Cleveland, who also served as the Convention Rules Committee in 2012, on the Convention Rules Committee. A move toward closed primaries would dramatically shift the way the Republican Party chooses its leader. Most states have open primaries or hybrid systems, from permitting crossover voting to allowing voters to register on site, while some have no party-based registration at all. Only about a dozen states have closed GOP primaries. I didn't know it was that few. That's interesting. Opponents of open primaries are particularly concerned about the prevalence early in the nominating calendar. After losing Iowa's caucuses, which are only open to registered Republicans, Trump beat rivals in New Hampshire and South Carolina, where Democrats and independents are permitted to cast crossover votes. Those victories branded Trump as the candidate to beat and knocked out several other candidates, including Rand Paul, Carly Fiorina, and Jeb Bush. Opponents of open primaries are floating a variety of proposals that would shift the balance of power. There's more to this. We're not going to get to the whole thing, but it is up on Politico. Well, the thing that I've always wondered about open primaries and why I think it's antithetical to what these what the parties are trying to do is, what's to stop? I what do they call it? There's even a name for this, Operation Chaos or something. what's to stop people from the opposing parties to vote if you have an open primary in your party's primary and vote for the least electable person from their point of view just to sabotage you? So in other words, if you have an open Republican primary, what's to stop a Democrat who would vote for Hillary Clinton from saying, my vote for Hillary doesn't matter because I'm pretty damn sure she's going to be the nominee. But Trump is a terrible candidate. It's an open primary. I'll go and vote in the Republican primary and I'll vote for Trump. What's to stop people from doing that? Now, I'm not saying that that's what happened here. You know, I mean, in these open primaries, maybe some of these independents and Democrats voted for Trump because they like him. We keep hearing about how Trump is actually appealing not only to Republicans, but some Democrats. I tend to be skeptical, but there is a lot of talk about that because Democrats have voted for him in these open primaries, apparently. But you have no way of proving or knowing the motive. So, and I did not realize, by the way, until reading that article, that only about a dozen states actually have closed primaries. I thought it was more than that. But anyway, we're out of time. We will be back tomorrow night, Friday nights. We are exclusively on IPM Nation 2 live at 11 p.m. Eastern. So I hope you will join me. And that's it for tonight. Good night, everybody.